Hey, this is L.A. Lloyd, and today we give you the introduction of a new podcast called Promotion Man. Now, I'll be interviewing Fred Myers, and we're going to set up the podcast today to kind of let you know what the future episodes will be about. Today, we explain what a promotion man is and how the radio and record industry work together. Also, the fact that Van Halen was Fred's first band to work with their debut album when Fred was just a kid, should lead to some great stories as well. And the old cliche, will there be hookers and blow? Well, let's check it out on Promotion Man.
For those of you that have grown up listening to classic rock, or for those of you that have actually discovered classic rock, this is a podcast about some intimate stories about some of the biggest iconic classic rock bands to dominate the globe.
That, my friends, is Fred Myers, and this podcast is called Promotion Man. My name is L.A. Lloyd, and today we're going to get the story behind Fred's history with a lot of the bands he was referring to, and we're going to kind of get you there from the very beginning and leading you through many of the bands that Fred worked with in his career. And so
the podcast is called Promotion Man, and most people have no idea what that term means. And really what it means, and to catch everybody up on the definition of what a promotion man is that back in the day, and we've watched plenty of movies where we saw old-time radio stations and either the DJ or the manager or the band themselves would convince the DJ to play their song.
Right.
And sometimes they would put money in the sleeve and, you know, whatever. But at the end of the day, those guys were actually called song pluggers.
Right.
And that was probably more in the 40s and 50s. Because you have to remember, radio really started in 1922.
Yeah.
So in 1922 is when, you know, the first radio signal went up, you know, and that's when it just kind of came alive. So now we evolve to what a promotion man is. And really, it's not promotion man, it's promotion people. Because both men and women are the ones that have gravitated to this position. And the position is simply working for a record label whose artists have signed recording deals. And the promotion man's job is to basically build and make the relationships with the DJs or what became music directors or program directors of a radio station.
I think people today want to hear about the, they've always heard the hooker and blow thing. You know, it's like all these, hey, man, he must have got a lot of hooker and blow to play that song. And I know that's kind of a funny take on it. But I mean, did a lot of this stuff go on? And we can get to this as the podcast gets further in its way here. But I mean, that was kind of the vision that everyone kind of thought. Is it true?
Well, actually, when we talk about classic rock, that becomes more prevalent for that era.
Right.
Because if we go back to, what was that one movie that George Clooney and they were country boys?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yes.
That was a great movie.
That was a good movie.
Why we are not remembered.
We'll
the
have
name.
To refer.
But I mean, so that they were the ones that ended up having this hit song that came from nowhere.
Right.
And it was kind of a one-off that they ended up in this recording studio. Well, if you fast track now into the early and mid-60s, mm-hmm. obviously the Beatles coming to America just opened it up for everybody. Because Elvis kind of started the rock and roll thing. But truthfully, I think Chuck Berry and some of those people... Little Richard did. But if we kind of fast track here, because this podcast, we can cover a lot of ground, but just to set it up so that people who are listening, we can tell them where we're headed. It was really the late 60s or 50 years ago, 1969, when some incredible albums were coming out by a plethora of bands that we still listen to this very day. So that's when the record companies really started to get organized as companies, where they were signing bands and these bands were giving recording contracts, whether it was just the serendipity of the time and space, some of the most amazing music started coming out. Well, at the same time, radio started to become a business, and it started to get more boundaries, if you will. And it was going from AM, which was a different frequency, to FM dial. They were kind of converging rock and roll and FM, dial were kind of converging at the same time.
Now, what was this, 72, 70, 73? I'm trying to remember as a kid. I grew up as, you know, listening to AM radio, and then all of a sudden I kind of made that transition to FM. But I was trying to remember the kind of the bridge. I want to say 72, 73.
I think you're kind of right there. I think it was right around 1970.
Yeah.
And what happened, really, is guys like you were coming into the FM station.
Right.
And it was the Wild West.
Yeah.
So you were actually bringing your own album collection in. You know, so they were playing deep album cuts,
right,
basically, is
right.
what it was.
Right.
And that was when I started as a promotion man with Warner Brother Records. You know, this is a true story about a kid from Detroit who got on a rock and roll ride of a lifetime. And I started out at a low-level record warehouse positions to getting hired as a local Warner Brothers promotion man at 22 years old. And the day was March 6, 1978. And my first day on the job, and it was also the very beginning of Van Halen's career as a signed major label artist.
What a great place to be at, man.
I know, right? So when you say, you know, hookers and blow, that was kind of the generation when
right.
that started to have more of a effect on everything, kind of like acid did in the 60s for Jimi Hendrix and the Doors and all of them. You know, LSD, I should say.
I'm glad you're starting off with Van Halen, though, because I have to say, I mean, there was so many great bands that came along during that era, but there was something different about Van Halen. And it was, I'll never forget this. I was at a concert. Van Halen was the opening act. This was in Raleigh. Boston was the headliner. There was bands like Black Oak, Arkansas, and I think Poco was on that line. It was a weird lineup. The only thing I remember, I just went to see Boston. That's all I wanted to see was Boston. They were the big thing at the time. And all I remember was seeing Eddie do the hammer-on thing with the guitar. I'd never seen that in my life. And, of course, that's what all the girls were like, oh, he's so cute and this and that. I was like, these guys are going to be rock stars. So you can carry on from that, man.
Well, so that was it. I mean, they were such a different band. And this podcast, for those of you that are interested in this topic, and hopefully you are, and you'll turn your other friends and either your parents or your children onto this podcast. But we're going to talk about a lot of this stuff. And how amazing was it for me at 22 years old to finally get my major promotion job with Warner Brothers, who are known to be an artist-driven record label out of Burbank, California, and then to have Van Halen on my first day. You know, basically, my first day was a Monday. It was March 6, 1978. At the time, Warner Brothers was dominating the record charts with supergroups like Fleetwood Mac, Rod Stewart, the Doobie Brothers. We had Bob Marley and the Wailers. We had Neil Young. We had Black Sabbath, Alice Cooper. We had The Who. And that's just kind of huge, right? I mean, you look at all those bands. But at this very same time, we were developing the Ramones. We were developing the Talking Heads, Devo, Dire Straits. We had just signed U2 out of Ireland. Prince, we had just signed him out of Minneapolis. We had this band out of Georgia called the B-52s. The Pretenders out of England, kind of from Akron, where Chrissy was from, but
right.
she ended up going to England. And then we had signed ZZ Top to a long-term recording deal because we knew that they were about to bust wide open into a much bigger arena for them in their career.
Mm-hmm.
So right there, you look at the dynamics of those type of bands at that point in time, and that's really what my story is about. So we'll tell stories about each of these bands and more from someone who was with them as they navigated the star-making machinery to the rise to global stardom. This is also a story about a kid from Detroit who was determined to escape the clutches of the automobile factories that gripped my father, my grandfather, my uncles, my neighbors, my friends. I remember growing up, it was very much a suburban community, and all the houses looked exactly alike. And to the left, the guys my friend's dad worked for Ford.
Right.
And to the right, my friend's dad worked for Chrysler, and my dad worked for Chevrolet.
There you go.
And that was really so typical of that whole thing, you know. But this is also a story about dreaming big and actually grabbing the lion's tail of one of the most powerful record labels in music history. Warner Brothers Records and the boutique labels that enhance the artist roster of some of the most iconic bands on the planet. This is also my story to share with you about growing up in one of the most influential music cities in the world at a time when some of the most groundbreaking, iconic music groups were recording some of the biggest selling, cultural altering albums and songs that have tested the boundaries of time. In Detroit, there was this little record label called Motown, and it was in my own backyard. And the influence that Motown and the artist roster had on the music universe was enormous. You know, so everybody knows Motown, and it was interesting because I grew up, I had three older sisters, and there's me. And I remember washing dishes, you know, every night, listening to WKNR or CKLW, which are the two AM stations in the city. And it was always Motown, you know, and it was just, you know, churning it out at that time. You know, but what people don't really realize is that Detroit was one of the most influential markets in the country with some of the most amazing rock bands. We talk about 1969. Well, we had MC5 and Iggy and the Stooges. We had Ted Nugent, Grand Funk Railroad, Rare Earth, Mitch Ryder and the Detroit Wheels, who actually lived right behind me and went to high school with my sister.
Wow.
Yeah, and truth is, his name is like Dave Levice, but he went by Mitch Ryder.
Well, it's a cooler name.
Much cooler name. I wish that was my name. We also had Alice Cooper and Bob Seger.
Yeah.
So Detroit radio was a national force. And because you're in radio, you'll appreciate this. There was this powerhouse radio station called CKLW, and they were from Canada. It was a Canadian station on the border.
Mm-hmm.
Why they beamed so hard into the Midwest is beyond me, because I think they were a 50-watt station. But yet they went into all of Michigan or the lower half of Michigan.
Well, they weren't regulated by the U.S. FCC. So now, again, I don't know what their power was, but I know the Mexican stations back in the Wolfman Jack days, you know, they would blast this AM signal that would cover half the United States
because
they weren't regulated by the FCC. So maybe it's the same for Canada, for CKLW, that they could really boost their signal to cover a good portion of the Midwest, and especially like Detroit, which is right across the river there.
Well, that's great, because see, I never knew that, but here's the history of CKLW. They beamed into the Ohio Valley, Indiana, Illinois, and Michigan.
Yeah.
So if you think of one radio station, kind of like a Wolfman Jack, you know, beaming in from a Mexican station, and it covers all this territory. Well, as you listeners out there think about it, well, if that station plays a song, all of a sudden, that song just doesn't get heard in that specific city. It gets heard to this region.
Right.
So CKLW was this powerhouse in Detroit, and they were just breaking some of the biggest bands out there, like The Who. She was the first one to play My Generation.
Wow.
And Elton John and Alice Cooper, who Alice has got a great story that we're going to talk about. And then, of course, Detroit was known to break Kiss and Jay Giles, which is why Detroit got a nickname, Detroit Rock City.
Right.
And there's a lot of rock bands that have Detroit, a song written about Detroit.
Even though they weren't from there.
Even though they weren't from there, because it just had this, you know, think about it. It's an industrial city. It's producing a ginormous amounts of automobiles and music.
Yeah.
And then not only rock and roll, but Motown putting out some of this amazing R&B. What a crazy place to grow up. And I'm proud to be there or be from there. And so this is my story. This is what this podcast is going to be about.
Well, I think we've got a lot of stories to cover, and I hope you'll enjoy this and subscribe and spread the word about Promotion Man. Fred Myers and I have known each other, about 14 years now, I think. So we've got a lot. 24 years.
Yeah, thank you.
What am I saying?
That's
14? 24 years.
Yeah, that makes
wow.
more sense.
So we've got just in Austin, Texas, where we're recording this at today, We've got a lot of history here. So maybe talk about, you know, you've mentioned some stuff here, but maybe just to kind of close it out today, just kind of say, you know, what people can learn from this podcast and what's the entertainment value of it and something that they should look forward to every time a new one is put out there.
I think the beauty of this podcast is both you and I can kind of educate you guys, you know, turn you on to how radio and the music business kind of worked hand in hand back in the day.
Yeah.
And then a couple of pieces that we'll talk about too is retail, you know, because there was a day when there used to be record stores.
Right.
And people would go to record stores and buy vinyl.
There is a nostalgia thing about this, but also before the internet. I think that's the clear thing that the internet obviously changed the music industry as we know it. These stories are all going to be pre-internet. Now, we'll definitely, you know, obviously concentrate on vinyl progressing into cassettes and 8-tracks and even CDs, but this is all going to be predominantly pre-internet stories of how the music industry was and how some of these artists are still, you know, surviving today. That's at least, if you want to look at it from a nostalgia story, or maybe you're just interested in how some of these artists were at the very beginning, you've got a great U2 story. You'll talk about one of their first times ever being in America that's coming up. That, I think, is what I take away from it when you first talked to me about it, is just how, you know, questions that I always had, you know, about how records got into the record store and how they were, you know, charted, and how did they say who sold a million records, and how did you get a platinum record? So I think that's the stuff that I'm really interested in.
Yeah, and that's really the stuff we'll be covering.
Yeah.
And so I think you guys will really enjoy that, because we're really going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about how the concert venues really started to go from a club to arenas. And we're going to talk about how merchandise went from bands, you know, convincing their girlfriends to set up a card table in front of the hall, you know, to literally a multi-billion dollar business that's called merchandising.
Well, I have seen The Dirt, which, you know, is the biopic on Motley Crue. And we did tease a little bit about the hookers and blow there at the beginning. There is obviously that part of rock and roll, but this is not what this one is really about. And it isn't a joking, tongue-in-cheek kind of thing, because we're going to have some fun stories. We can talk about artists that Fred and I have had dinners with and some of the things that happened during these times. But again, we really want to concentrate on the music and these careers and really just some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that maybe you've always been curious about.
Yeah, and that's what we hope will be this entertainment value for you guys, is that this is of interest and you've never really understood how it played out and how it worked. And both L.A. Lloyd and myself can kind of share with you, you know, what we went through these past 40-some years, because, you know, all these bands that are celebrating 50 years in business, you know, 1969, if you
yeah.
will, and Woodstock and all of that.
Right.
I think that was, I think from 1969 to the early 80s, there's some rich, rich stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
And that's really the crux of what I'll be talking about, because I was very fortunate to be with all of these bands and more. And I hope that you guys not only enjoy this podcast, but are willing to go out there and share it with your friends and family.
Yeah, for sure.
And we'll keep it as PG, but we'll get a little R-rated here and there. How are you not going to do that in rock and roll?
You got to, man. You know. Detroit, rock and roll, you got it. This is going to be kind of hard to
stop. But, I mean, I have some crazy stories about some of these other topics that I think you'll all get a pretty good laugh out of, because they were funny.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Again, the podcast is called Promotion Man. He is Fred Myers. I am L.A. Lloyd, and we kind of take you from the record side and the radio side of our careers. I've got a lot of stuff to talk about with the radio side.
Yeah, that's why I think you're going to get a lot out of this, and I think you setting it up as, you know, pre-internet is kind of a great way of doing it.
Yeah, and we'll have another one for you very soon, right here on Promotion Man. Promotion Man, the true backstories of the most iconic bands in the world, told by Fred Myers and interviewed by L.A. Lloyd. Get involved and interact on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Links at promotion-man.com. Download the weekly Promotion Man podcast on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Play, or your favorite provider. Thanks for listening.